I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. The running scene in Maryland is in full bloom. The Frederick Running Festival took place earlier this month. Chestertown held its classic 10-miler last weekend. The Baltimore 10-miler launches on Saturday. Races in Annapolis, Towson, Columbia, and elsewhere fill the calendar for the rest of the summer. And with all those runners logging all those miles, to say nothing of the weekend warriors playing softball or cycling or even yanking weeds from their gardens, there will inevitably be a few sore ankles and creaky knees and tender shoulders. Today on Midday, Dr. Miho Tanaka of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Johns Hopkins Hospital tells us what we can do to avoid or to at least minimize those aches and pains. We'll take your calls and we'll ask the eternal question, what hurts today? That's all coming up on Midday after the headlines. Hey, good afternoon, everybody. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you are a runner, then you will, of course, recognize this tune by The Boss, because it's something that they play before the start of almost every race. Organizers expect upwards of 5,000 people to assemble in Druid Hill Park on Saturday morning for the 10th annual Baltimore 10-miler. Last year, the race attracted just about that many folks, who ran from the Maryland Zoo to Lake Montebello and back again. Eric Schuler, he's 23 years old. He lives in Laurel. He was the top male finisher. He ran it in just under 54 minutes. That's a record for the event. Megan DiGregorio, who is 28 years old. She lives in White Marsh. She finished first among women in just over an hour and 4 minutes. And as a very slow runner myself, let me tell you, that is moving, both of them. So if you will be running this race or anywhere else this weekend, or if you're into cycling, swimming, soccer, baseball, or any number of other athletic pursuits, I've got great news. I got terrific news. I have fabulous news. I have the kind of news that is the cause for the strumming of the lyre, the banging of the cymbals. Dr. Tanaka is back on Midday. Miho Tanaka is here in the house. She knows the challenges that are faced by professional athletes and weekend warriors alike. She's an orthopedic surgeon and assistant professor of surgery and the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Johns Hopkins Hospital. She's a team physician for U.S. soccer. She recently traveled to Argentina with one of the national teams for a training camp there. And before moving to Baltimore, she was the team physician for the St. Louis Cardinals and the St. Louis Surge in the WNBA. She has also served as an assistant team physician for the Baltimore Orioles and another professional women's basketball team, the New York Liberty. She's a former collegiate athlete herself. She was a member of the Stanford University track team, and she has treated student athletes from high school to college. So Dr. Tanaka is here today to take our questions about fitness and how to get the most out of our exercise regimens, regardless of our age, our gender, or our level of fitness. You are welcome to have questions and comments for Dr. Tanaka. 410-662-8780 is our number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And you, of course, are always cordially required to follow us on Twitter at Midday Tom Hall. Miho, it's great to see you. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
So, are there common mistakes? I mean, in your practice as an orthopedic surgeon, I mean, you do knees, you do shoulders, you do elbows. Are there things that you find your patients sort of do over and over again that it's like the old joke, you know, that you go to the doctor, you say, doctor, it hurts when I do that. And she says, well, don't do that. Yeah. I mean, what are the things that people should don't do that?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's usually not just one thing, but it is the way they approach whatever it is they're doing. So whether it's running a specific sport or, you know, gardening, whatever it is, they just go too hard too fast. And so whatever it is they love, I think most people don't stop to take breaks. They just, you know, the weather's nice and they go out there and they all of a sudden do 6 hours of whatever they haven't done for the last 6 to 8 months. And it's always this similar sort of overuse, too hard, too fast.
Yeah, it's sort of overuse and sudden use.
Yes.
You know, you're, all of a sudden you're just not used to it. And then, I mean, I think a lot of us have that experience, you know, the first day in the garden,
yep.
All of a sudden that night, you know, woo, there's some muscles in there I forgot I had.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
I mean, are there things that you find, for example, if we take the instance of runners in particular, because mm-hmm. there's this big race coming up this weekend, are there things that runners do typically that they shouldn't be doing, things that are avoidable practices that they're doing?
Yeah, I think one of the most common things I see is that people who transition from recreational running to more serious running, so they're training for a race, need a lot more maintenance in order to be able to do that level of running. So not stretching, not warming up, you know, for a couple mile run, just for a little bit of exercise is usually okay. But if you start ramping up to doing, you know, 7 miles, 10 miles consistently several times a week when you're training for a race, your body usually can't sustain that level of activity without doing those things. So it's not so much making a mistake as much as not doing the things that you need to do in order to be able to keep up with that.
And I think I asked you this the last time you were here. And the last time you were here was right before the Baltimore Running Festival, right, which is the marathon, the half marathon, the 5K. So we tend to have you when people are about to run, because the Baltimore 10-miler for the running community is a very favored race. It's partially favored because it's got the best swag of any race going. I mean, you get like great jackets and really? Hats and watches and stuff. But I mean, that's not that we are motivated by by the gifts that we pay so dearly for, because it ain't cheap to register for these things.
Yeah.
So when you do register for it, you know, you've got an investment. Plus, 10 miles for people who are running casually is a long time, you know, and it's not as bad as a half marathon, which is an extra three. But, you know, 10 miles, you gotta be trying. The pressure to do this, I mean, it's easy to just race out of the gate and do it. So I think I did, in fact, ask you this the last time. Should you stretch before or after? Because I think I asked you, but of course I have a mind like a six, so I forgot. But there is a controversy about whether stretching is best or most, you know, advantageous if you do it while you're warmed up when you're finished, or whether while you're cold and you're about to start.
Yeah. I do remember we talked a little bit about this. And there's kind of two purposes in stretching. One is to gain flexibility, and that's where the static stretching is considered to be important. So when you're cold, but you're, you know, you're holding your stretches, and then the dynamic stretching. So that's with the warm up and really doing kind of, you know, certain movements or push offs in addition to the stretching. That's better for the warm up type activity. So I would say they both have their purposes. And you can never stretch too much, really, I think.
Stretching. So before and after
before
is a
and
good
after.
Idea.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. The dynamic warm-ups, you know, before, and the static warm-ups where you're sitting and stretching after, I think usually make the most sense.
All right. So in this one case, moderation isn't a good thing. You just go overboard on the stretching. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you can hurt anything by stretching too much. Yeah.
And how long should people hold stretches for? Because there's a couple of different schools of thought about this as well. Some say that the stretch doesn't do you any good if you just hold it for 20 seconds or something. But, you know, I had a guy tell me, an orthopedic guy, say, you should do it for 2 minutes.
Okay.
Hold, and I actually do this sometimes when I time myself on the watch.
Yeah.
Stretch your hamstring for 2 minutes. That 30 seconds isn't going to be all that salubrious, but 2 minutes is really going to do the trick. Do you have an opinion about that?
You know, I think there's probably some science around this, and the exercise physiologists and physical therapists probably have some really great answer. My sense is that with stretching, everybody's a little bit different. And so depending on how warmed up you are, and depending on how, you know, what your starting baseline level of flexibility is, I think 30 seconds versus 2 minutes could be very different depending on that person. I think one of the most important things, though, is waiting for that sense of, you know, when your muscle kind of gives and you get that sense of relaxation. I think waiting for that, and also looking for symmetry. So making sure, you know, you have to do both sides.
Yeah. If you're doing hamstrings or something like that.
That's exactly right. And when you're doing left and right, not just holding the same amount, but really making sure that you're getting the same range of motion. So getting to that same level on each leg or each shoulder, I think, is more important than the actual duration of time that you're holding it for.
Dr. Miho Tanaka is our guest. She is an orthopedic surgeon and the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Johns Hopkins Hospital. We jokingly call these segments What Hurts Today. This is an idea that our director and engineer Luke Spicknall and Aaron Henkin, who hosts Out of the Blocks, came up with years ago. I'm still, I hope, officially on the audition list to host that program if it ever becomes a regular program at WYPR. And in case, and until it does, we're just, you know, we're we're allocating the title to Midday here. But if you have a question for Dr. Tanaka about something that might hurt with you or something that you want to do to avoid something hurting in the future, 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So let's talk about a couple of common injuries that runners have. One is Achilles tendonitis. So this is Achilles' heel, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Why does that happen? Why do you get to the point where your heel feels like you want to chop it off? and how do you get rid of it?
Sure. So it sounds like maybe you've had this before.
Oh,
in the
no,
way that
not
you've
me.
Described. So the Achilles tendon is where the gastroc muscle, so your calf muscles, attach to your heel. And so that's where anytime you do any sort of push-off, where you're pushing your heel off the ground, for example, running, your tendon is going to see stress. And so anytime there is excessive use, so if you do too much, if you go too hard, like we talked about earlier, if you do too much too soon without stretching, any of those things can cause inflammation of the tendon where it's seeing too much load. Of course, you need some what we call physiological load. So you need some amount of stress in order to strengthen your muscles, in order to make gains. But when you go outside of that envelope, essentially, of where you can recover from, then that's what leads to persistent inflammation, or what we call tendonitis, which is inflammation of the tendon. Sometimes it can be just a minor thing that sets it off, a change in shoes, running a new hill, especially for runners, because it's such a repetitive sport. You're taking tens of thousands of steps over the course of a run. A minor tweak that loads the tendon differently can lead to inflammation. And so that's usually what I see, is either a seasoned runner who's changed their shoes or done something different, or sometimes a new runner who has really started ramping up and put a little too much load on their tendons. The treatment for this is always twofold. One is to reduce the inflammation, and you can do that. Obviously, ice is a great natural anti-inflammatory, or there's an oral anti-inflammatory that you can take, things like Advil. There's more prescription level, high dose, anti-inflammatories as well. And there's also a topical way to do that as well. In physical therapy, they can do things like iontophoresis, cortisone topically, and that basically reduces the inflammation and takes care of the pain.
What's iontophoresis? Is that the electrical thing?
It is. It's ultrasound with a medication. So you actually need to have a prescription for this. And the ultrasound delivers that anti-inflammatory to your tendons. And it really only works in tendons that are directly under the skin. So you can only...
So it sort of directly delivers it to the...
Exactly.
To the
it
thing that
increases
ails you.
The penetration of that. Yeah. So it has to be fairly close to the skin. So those things will reduce the inflammation and reduce the pain. But to minimize the risk of it coming back, you actually have to strengthen whatever muscle is attached to that tendon, which sounds a little bit counterintuitive.
So it's not the tendon you're worried about, it's the muscle that it's attached to.
Yes, the tendon is actually just the way the muscle attaches to a bone. So any muscle in its attachment to a bone becomes a little bit more fibrous and a little bit more cartilaginous, essentially, as it transitions into the bony attachment. And that's essentially what a tendon is. It's the way the muscle connects to the bone. And that's the way it's a little bit less flexible than the muscle belly, and that's why it tends to see more load than the actual muscle itself. But a lot of people, when they get injured, they think, oh, I have to rest it because I hurt it. But by resting it, you're actually deconditioning whatever muscle it is that hurts. So in this case, you're deconditioning your calf muscle, so that by the time you feel rested and you go back out to doing the same level of activity, it actually feels like more stress because now you've been deconditioned, and that's usually what leads to this persistent inflammation. So in addition to treating...
Yeah, that's funny because some of this is kind of counterintuitive.
Yes,
you think, I'm hurting, I should just sit on the couch and eat Doritos and watch TV.
Right. Right?
That's my answer. I guess that's not so right, huh?
Well, if it works for you, I think that's fine.
Oh, I'm not saying it works, believe me. And I said nothing about working.
But I think it's a natural thing to try that. And then that's why a lot of people feel like their condition is persistently getting worse, even though they haven't used it. Every time they go back, they have more pain than when they did the first time. And that's pretty classic for any sort of tendonitis, overuse type condition. And so that's where physical therapy can be really helpful in treating that, because they can gradually increase your activities, increase your tolerance, strengthen without overdoing it, but also without underdoing it, which is typically what happens when you're resting.
Dr. Miho Tanaka, she's an orthopedic surgeon and the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Johns Hopkins Hospital. We'd love to hear from you if you are running your first 10-mile race this weekend, and love to know how you've trained for it and how you're feeling about it. Or if you're not running, doesn't matter a bit, you can give us a call, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. Before we take a break, a correction from yesterday's show. I misidentified one of the 8 people who were killed in Baltimore last week. I identified Reese Bowman as a little boy. She was an infant baby girl. She was just 8 months old when she died in a daycare center in East Baltimore. And I apologize to her family and to our listeners. Also, we want to do a shout-out to a young man named Kari Myrick, who is 12 years old, a 7th grader from Baltimore, and the winner of a United States Chess Federation national title. Luke Broadwater of the Baltimore Sun reports that Kari often hones his skills at the Reflection Eternal Barbershop in Baltimore's Barclay neighborhood. He went 7-0 in Nashville 2 weeks ago to win the national title. So congratulations to Kari. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. We'll be back in a flash.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on the broadcast, it's the Midday Movie Mayhem with Jed Dietz from the Maryland Film Festival and Anne Hornaday from The Washington Post. We'll also check in with theater critic Jay Wynn Russick for her weekly theater review. She's been to see Noises Off at the Everyman Theater, and she'll let us know what she thinks. Hope you can join us tomorrow for Midday. Today, we're talking about running and exercise and injury avoidance. Dr. Miho Tanaka is here. She has just returned from Asia, where she was traveling and lecturing in 6 countries as one of 3 fellows of the American Sports Medicine Society. She's the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Johns Hopkins Hospital, and she's treated everyone from professional baseball and basketball players to weekend warriors, just like the folks who are running in the Baltimore 10-miler on Saturday. So whether you're running or not this weekend, if you've got a question for Dr. Tanaka, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, to follow us on Twitter @MiddayTomHall. Let's go to the phone. Steve in Seton Hill, welcome to Midday with Dr. Tanaka.
Yeah, hi. I have a question about a possible rotator cuff injury. I was cleaning up my boat for the first time this year and did a stupid thing and fell, and I had a impact on my from a side of a plywood box, but anyway, of my upper right bicep, and I feel it in my shoulder. And I was wondering, I did have an X-ray, said there was nothing too bad showed up on that. But I know a rotator cuff injury can be very serious, and would that show up on an X-ray? And what is the general recovery time for that type of injury? I know they're common in certain sports.
Well, rotator cuff injuries, you're right, are fairly common. They wouldn't actually show up on an X-ray because X-ray only shows bone and it doesn't show soft tissue. Now, if you were to have kind of a long-term chronic rotator cuff injury, and I'm talking 10 or 20 years, then you could have some sequelae, so essentially some changes that might show up that might indicate that. But otherwise, a rotator cuff injury would show up on an MRI, which is the best for looking at soft tissue, so things like ligaments and tendons and things like that. However, I would caution that, you know, for anyone who gets an MRI basically above the age of 35 or 40, you're going to see at least some partial thickness tearing or more of the rotator cuff because it's just a process of wear and tear. And so as we get older, our tendons and our ligaments become a little bit more frayed just from use, so the same way that you wear down the soles of your shoes. And so when you get an MRI of that, even though you may be symptomatic or you may have symptoms, it may be read as a tear. And so that doesn't always correlate with the type of problem that you have. So I do want to just caution you about that. However, if you are concerned about it, I think the most important thing is to see somebody who sees a lot of shoulders, and based on the physical exam, they can determine if you need an MRI for that or not, and that might be the next step to diagnose that.
All right. Well, Steve, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Eric at the Aberdeen Proving Ground, you've got a question, I think, about plantar fasciitis, and there are a couple of other callers who have as well. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Name's Eric Pelt, and I have bilateral plantar fasciitis with bilateral pes planus, so I got flat feet. Used to run 5Ks, you know, on occasion. Now I don't do much of any of that nowadays. Just what's best for the bilateral plantar fasciitis? Well, how can I recover from that?
So plantar fasciitis is a tough problem, especially for runners. And really, it's difficult to rest your feet because you're always on your feet. Even if you stop running, you can't stop walking, obviously. The combination of anti-inflammatories and stretching and relative rest, essentially. So maybe not stopping everything completely, but avoiding the activities that flare it up are the most effective treatments for plantar fasciitis. Sometimes if you're really flat-footed, an insole or an insert to support your arches and take the pressure off of that can be helpful as well. In severe cases that persist despite those treatments and especially the stretching regimen, there are some types of injections, but those are still fairly in the early stages.
Thanks for your call. Eric D., I guess you've got the same issue in Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with Dr. Tanaka.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Steve sort of answered part of my question. I had a cardiac rehab and for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I was on the treadmill and running, felt fine. And then as soon as I got out on real ground and started, I was walking, but then I started to run, and then it popped up again. And I hadn't had it in like 25 or so years, and I'd always been a runner. The podiatrist said just stop running, and he was trying to get me an orthotic to fit in my shoe. He gave me a temporary one, and I don't feel the pain as much, and an apparatus that I can put on my foot at night to keep it stretched. But the question is, I'm not doing any running, but will I be able to get back to the point where I could, and I don't run like I used to, but, you know, do some jogging.
Yeah, well, thanks for the call, Dee. I mean, the plantar fasciitis is one of those sort of chronic problems. I mean, folks I know who've had it, and I've actually struggled with it a little bit myself, it doesn't go away in 2 days.
Right. It's really tough to get rid of, usually because there's so many factors that can contribute to it, and there's little things that can, you know, set it off. And like I said, it's tough to rest. You know, the Strasburg sock, which is what he was describing, which is an apparatus that kind of stretches your toes and pulls on your toes while you're sleeping, is great because that's when you're not using it is when everything kind of shrinks and tightens up. And so those first few steps after you get up in the morning can be really painful. I would say for someone who's been able to run in the past without this problem, most likely you would be able to return to doing that. Sometimes if you've had a cardiac procedure or something where you're not able to do whatever activity it is, whether it's running or whatever, on a consistent basis, getting back into it can be a little bit tough. And so sometimes, you know, easing in.
And I will say this just for what it's worth, in my own experience, you can get the orthotics not only for your running shoes, but you can get them for dress shoes.
Yep, that's
I mean,
right.
They sell them at running stores and stuff, so you can wear them during the day, you know, when you're at work and you're not on the track. So,
right.
And those have been helpful. We have an email here from Amanda. She says, I'm a 27-year-old woman who exercises often. I've been doing squats at home for a few months now and recently have been feeling a shift of a ligament, she says with a question mark, in the back of my left knee when I squat. No pain, just strange. Should I be worried?
That's a tough question. In general, if you feel some shifting without pain, or we say painless popping, if it doesn't seem to functionally limit you, then it's not too concerning. Obviously, if it changes the way you work out, changes the way you squat, or persists or get worse, then I would definitely recommend having it checked out. But based on what I'm hearing there, initially, I wouldn't be too concerned.
That's good to know. Dan in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Dr. Tanaka. Hi, Dan. How you doing? Are you there?
I'm good. Yeah. I have a question about cramping and possibly how to treat that through nutrition. I do moderate miles as a cyclist, and I will sometimes experience cramping during the activity, and then more annoyingly, maybe during the next like 2 or 3 hours after the activity, I'll experience really severe cramps. And I do try and stay hydrated, and I'm just wondering if there's anything I can do in terms of nutrition to treat those cramps.
Well, thanks for the call. I've heard also that cramping is sometimes indicative of a potassium deficit. Is that true?
Yeah, I think in general it can be an electrolyte imbalance, and potassium is one of the main electrolytes in the body, which is why, you know, they recommend eating a banana, which can be high in potassium. Generally, it's a combination of dehydration and an electrolyte imbalance. And a lot of athletes who drink water, but you're losing sweat, can essentially offset that that electrolyte balance. So the first thing I would recommend is considering a electrolyte supplement, either the Tabs or Gatorade, instead of water. That's the first thing. The second thing is most people are not hydrating as much as they think they are, or are not doing as much as they need to, so reassessing that. And then the third is possibly consulting with a sports nutritionist who might be able to give you some recommendations. I would say not so much on the nutrition end, but again, on the electrolyte end, which can be consumed, you know, through liquids.
And is electrolyte consumption outside of the days you're cycling or running or playing sports also important? In other words, if you have a diet that really has no electrolytes, and if you never eat a banana or you never drink Gatorade, and then you go out and you do 50 miles on your bike and you eat bananas and drink Gatorade that day, can you make up for it that quickly?
I think it's pretty unusual to not take in any electrolytes, because it's pretty much in everything. There's the concept of electrolytes, which is, you know, the mineral balance, and then there is the concept of nutrition and eating healthy. In general, no, you can't make up for, you know, not eating healthy for the rest of the week for one workout. But electrolytes and hydration, that is something that you can kind of suddenly take in a high volume to support, you know, your workout for that day.
Teresa in Jarrettsville, welcome to Midday with Dr. Miho Tanaka.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just diagnosed with sciatic. I never had this before. I'm going to PT twice a week. I went to the doctor's. I'm on pain meds. I did steroids for a week. I want to know how much activity I could do. Should I go back to my normal activity, or should I just take it easy for a while?
All right, thanks for the call. Sciatic nerve, boy, there's lots of folks with problems in that area.
Yeah, it's a big problem. So sciatic nerve, or sciatica, is essentially inflammation of any nerve that goes from your spine typically down to your leg. And when you have back problems, as most people do, you can pinch that nerve mostly by a little bit of inflammation, which causes symptoms, a lot of electric symptoms going down the leg. It sounds like she's getting all of the right treatment in terms of the physical therapy and the anti-inflammatories. What I generally tell people in terms of activities is that the point of the physical therapy is to get you back to being a normal person. So to go from being injured to being able to do your normal day-to-day activities without pain. Once you can do that, then you can start becoming active again. And if you skip that step, then you're going to keep re-irritating it. So I would say the best thing is to check in with your physical therapist, because based on your progress every week, they should be able to recommend some new exercises based on how you're doing.
And it is treatable. I mean, you can get rid of sciatica.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of times it'll go away without any surgery.
Terrific. Tracy in Annapolis, welcome to Midday with Dr. Tanaka.
Hi, I'm a yoga instructor down here, and I find that when I kneel, I get a cramp in the arch of my foot. And I'm wondering, is that the beginning of plantar fasciitis, or what might be going on?
Is it a pain, or is it just a tightness that you get in your foot?
Did you say a bean?
A pain.
A pain. Is it a pain
no,
or tightness?
No, it's like a knot.
It's like a knot.
It knots up in the arch. Or sometimes if I'm sitting and I just curl my toes, it'll knot up in the arch.
That sounds a little bit more like cramping than actually plantar fasciitis. So previously we discussed, you know, hydration and electrolyte balance. It sounds a little bit more related to that. Plantar fasciitis usually presents with a lot of pain, and the pain is more prominent than the stiffness. So I would consider maybe addressing that first, in addition to a good stretching program.
All right. Good luck, Tracy. And of course, as a yoga instructor, you probably, you know, you
stretch
not,
all the time.
You are not a foreigner to stretching. Yeah, that's good.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for your call. David in New Freedom, Pennsylvania. Welcome to Midday with Dr. Tanaka.
Hello. I'm a 70-year-old, formerly pretty competitive runner for many decades. I was a 240 marathoner back in the day.
Good for you. By the way, for folks who don't do marathons, that's really fast.
I'm sorry?
I'm just telling our audience who doesn't run marathons, running one in 2 hours and 40 minutes is really fast.
Well, it's really interesting. You know, 30 years ago, that was no big deal. Now it is. There's many more people running. But at the front, the competitive nature of it, there's far fewer really, really fast runners. Go figure. Anyway, after a period of layoff, I ran the Baltimore Half Marathon with, I admit now, not enough training and ran it too fast. This was a couple of years ago. I tore my medial meniscus by pushing too hard and not having trained long enough. Here's the question. I'm pretty much symptom free. Running is irritates it after a couple of years. What do you have to say about using Synvisc injections prophylactically as a means to get me back to moderate running?
All right. Well, David, thank you for your call and for your confession. Synvisc is considered by many a miracle drug, including myself, as a matter of fact. So tell folks what Synvisc does.
Sure. So Synvisc is basically a gel that recreates joint fluid. It's primarily used to treat arthritis, where you're losing the gliding surfaces in the knee, and that can be a source of irritation for the knee. So by minimizing that, you basically have less pain in the knee. But it's more for arthritis and not so much for meniscal pain. However, the two tend to go hand in hand. So if you have arthritis, you almost by definition have some wear and tear of the meniscus as well. Synvisc is the brand name, but there's several types of injection that are all the same. They're called hyaluronic acid, and they've been shown in some capacity to reduce your need for a knee replacement if you're symptomatic by at least 5 years. So it is, you know, some people consider it a miracle injection. I have not seen it used in the capacity of a prophylaxis, so to prevent any arthritis. Although if you said that you were 70, you likely have some of that as well. I would definitely not do it unless you're symptomatic, because an injection is still a treatment. It's still invasive, and there are still risks associated with that.
And full disclosure, Dr. Tanaka gave me a dose of Synvisc about a year ago. She attacked me with a needle full of the stuff. It was bloody for a while, but I must say, there was no blood. I feel terrific now. I mean, I was not running. I wasn't able to run for 2 years. However, I also understand that this is a very expensive drug, and insurance companies often, you know, you have to qualify for this drug. So, David, it's possible that your insurance wouldn't cover it. Only because, you know, you have to medically qualify for it. So that could be a complication. Right. Yeah. We got to take a little break, and we will do that and come back with more questions for Dr. Miho Tanaka. She is an orthopedic surgeon and the director of the Women's Sports Medicine Program at Johns Hopkins Hospital. And we will take more of your questions and comments about health, fitness, and injury avoidance after we do take our little break. Join us at 410-662-8780. Send us an email, midday@wypr.org, or join us on Twitter at Midday Tom Hall. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Don't run away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, I want to let you know about a new thing for Baltimore called Park Run. It's a free weekly 5K running group. Park runs take place in 11 U.S. cities and in 13 other countries. Its founder, Paul Sinton Hewitt, was in Baltimore's Leakin Park yesterday to announce the launch of Charm City's very own free weekly park run, which is going to start on June 24th. And we've got a link to more information at WIPR.org/midday. There are a number of other exercise groups in the area, too. There's one called the November Project, which meets at Rash Field and Patterson Park every week. And there are groups that do cycling and yoga and all sorts of other stuff. So a lot of folks find that exercising with a group keeps them motivated and on track, if you'll forgive the pun. It's midday. As I said, I'm Tom Hall here in the studio with Dr. Miho Tanaka. She was named one of 20 women who are changing the sport of running and the world by Women's Running magazine. She's a team physician for U.S. soccer. She has been a team physician for the St. Louis Cardinals, the Baltimore Orioles, and a couple of different professional women's basketball teams. She's an assistant professor of orthopedic surgery and the director of women's sports medicine program at Johns Hopkins Hospital. We're taking your questions and comments for Dr. Tanaka about sports injuries and how to prevent them in whatever sport or exercise you choose to keep yourself fit. Our phone number here at midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayTomHall. Let me ask you about your role as a team physician, because you've done baseball, soccer, a bunch of different sports. For example, when you were the team physician for the St. Louis Cardinals, and a pitcher, you know, comes to you and says, I got elbow problems. There are so many pitchers now in the major leagues, and even as low as high school, who are getting what's known as Tommy John surgery. Yeah. I have a good friend, Mark Hyman, who's a regular on our show, who wrote a book called Until It Hurts, America's Obsession with Youth Sports and How It Hurts Our Kids. And he talked about the really alarming number of young kids, 16 sure. years old, getting Tommy John surgery. The dynamic of the patient-doctor relationship there is very intriguing to me because, I mean, when I come to you and I say, my knee hurts, you can say, okay, well, take this shot and you'll feel better. Yeah. When a, you know, 22-year-old pitcher comes to you, he's probably coming with the owner who has just paid $20 million for the services of his elbow. Yeah. And yeah. then you've got to diagnose this elbow and say, here's the best thing for you as my patient, mm-hmm. but you're employed by the person who's got a huge investment in this young man's body. Yeah. I mean, that's tricky.
It is tricky. Yeah. I think that's where sports medicine, you know, from a, in terms of a medical seriousness perspective, you know, sports medicine is not life and death, but in terms of how much money is on the line and the business of sports medicine, that's where I think it can become very, very complicated, especially at the professional level. And you're exactly right. At the professional level, it is a business, and it's not just about medicine and not just about health. Sometimes the healthiest thing or the best thing is to stop playing, which, you know, sometimes is not an option. So you have to really toe that line, but still remember that, you know, your obligation first is the Hippocratic Oath. Secondly, you know, is your team affiliations and things like that.
So you just got to sort of speak truth to power.
You got to do what's right. Yeah. And yeah. a lot of times, you know, it's just speaking the facts and informing the patient slash player and the agent and the owner what the risks and benefits are with every step that you take. So you could do this, and this is the worst thing that could happen, and this is the best thing that could happen. This is the likelihood that that could happen. And then, you know, as a team, come together and make that decision. And especially as you get more towards the professional levels, the athletic trainer is very, very closely involved with the player, and more than the team physician. So, you know, if you're watching football, if you watch, you know, baseball, the people who run out onto the field are actually the athletic trainers. You rarely see a physician running out onto the field. And a lot of times they have a good sense of what's going on more than what the player is telling you. So sometimes, you know, there's a fear. The player says, if I say a certain word, they're going to, you know, take me out of the game.
Yeah, so they're reluctant sometimes. They may not be giving you all of the information you actually need to do a diagnosis.
Yeah, because they're protecting their careers sometimes, you know, and so they want to make sure that, that you know, they take care of that. So it is a tricky relationship
yeah,
and a
yeah,
tricky thing to navigate, yeah.
I mean, I know the National Football League, you know, has made a big truck about the fact that they've now got physicians on the field, you know, people are coming off and they're a little dizzy and they're a little spacey and they're looking in their eyes and they're, you know, waving their fingers in front of them and saying, you've got a concussion.
Yeah.
Go sit down or get out of the game. And there are even people sitting up in the the sky box or whatever, the press box or whatever it is, the team box. I mean, with the other coaches, and they're looking at the field to see if there are any players who are a little wobbly. And they're informing the coach and informing the trainers. So they're trying to do that because, you know, concussions in the NFL, of course, has been very much in the news.
Right, that's exactly right, yeah.
We have all these retired NFL players who have these brain injuries that seem to have, you know, been animated by their careers. So,
yeah.
Interesting stuff, a team physician. Dave in Annapolis, welcome to Midday with Dr. Miho Tanaka.
Hi, Dr. Tanaka. I'm 73, and I ice skate, figure skate year-round, and before I get on the rink, I go through, I use a leg press, and then when I get on, I do a lot of change of edges where you're on one leg and you're kind of leaning over from one side to the other, kind of going in a sine wave pattern. And occasionally when I do that, I feel a strain for a while, but then it goes away. Am I doing any damage by doing the weight leg press beforehand?
The leg press beforehand, I don't think is necessarily doing any damage. That sense of strain and then kind of relaxing that you described is exactly what you should be trying to achieve, which is what you get in the dynamic stretching process. So I think that you're very astute in pointing that out, and I think that that should be your goal before proceeding to more aggressive maneuvers on the ice.
All right. Well, thank you for your call and good luck. Here's an email from Kate who says, I've been a runner off and on for most of my life, but a few years ago while training to run a half marathon, I developed a persistent pain in my right glute that ran down the back of my leg. And the subject of this email, by the way, is piriformis anadrome. And she says, I had to stop running and miss the race because of the pain. I've done two lengthy rounds of physical therapy, but still have chronic pain. It flares up, especially when driving and long trips, she says, are excruciating. Any suggestions?
Yeah, so piriformis syndrome is something that is common in runners. And you can get some tightness in the gluteus area, and that can impinge on the nerves, essentially. I think if it's a persistent problem and it's not going away, it's important to make sure that it's not something else like sciatica or IT band syndrome, which can present in a very similar way but would require different types of treatment. So that would be my first recommendation. Second of all, you know, if you find that you're persistently getting tight, having a good warm-up and strengthening regimen and probably a course of physical therapy to help address that would be helpful. But getting the right diagnosis first is the most important.
All right. Well, thanks for the call or the email, and good luck, Kate. Doug in Catonsville, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. So I've been running for about 2 years. I went from 2 miles. I maxed out at about 6 miles, but I started getting a little performance decline, like, I don't know, 9 months ago. And I went down in mileage. And since then, I've gotten a chest strap, you know, heart monitor, see, like, how many beats I'm at, all that stuff. And consistently at 2.5 to 3 miles, I mean, I'm feeling fatigue. I feel like I should be a better runner, and I've tried different techniques, but I'm actually not progressing in speed and really not even distance now, even though, yeah, I can run 4 or 5 miles, but 2.5 to 3 miles, I decline, and my heart rate kind of consistently is almost maxing out for my age. I'm 40 years old, but I'm in good shape and everything. So why is that happening? And I...
Yeah, interesting question, Doug. Thank you for the call. So here, you know, you the old adage, practice makes perfect. You know, the longer you run, I mean, most runners, especially if they're young like Doug in his 40s, you get better, you get faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'd be curious to see whether this is more a physiological problem, meaning that, you know, he feels like he's limited by his cardiovascular status and breathing and heart rate, versus he feels that his muscles are fatiguing, because those can have two different reasons. If you feel like your muscles are fatiguing, one of the things that you can do is maybe even see a running coach to see if your form and the way that you're running has an effect on that, and if you're not using your muscles efficiently. If you feel like it's a cardiovascular problem and you feel like it is related to your heart rate, it's probably worth checking in with your primary care doctor first to make sure there's nothing else going on that could be contributing to that.
So it could be a cardiovascular issue. Yeah. Got to make sure. All right. Well, thank you for that call. Here's an email from Janet who says, would you please talk about the diagnosis and causes of frozen frozen shoulder. What's the difference between frozen shoulder and rotator cuff, and what are the treatments for frozen shoulder?
Sure. So that's a great question. Frozen shoulder is a condition that we call idiopathic, meaning we don't really know what causes it. It's most common in women between the ages of 40 and 60, and more common in diabetics. Basically, these patients present with a sudden onset of shoulder pain, and it happens in three stages. So the first stage is freezing, where you have inflammation of the shoulder capsule, which is the lining that goes around the ball and socket joint. And it's very, very painful. And it's probably one of the only conditions that I see where patients ask me to cut off their arm because it's so painful. They can't move it. They can't do anything. And with that comes stiffness. Stage two is the frozen stage, where you have a lot of stiffness but a lot less pain, unless you try to get to a certain range of motion, and when you hit that level of resistance, that can cause a lot of pain. Finally, it goes to stage three, which is the thawing phase, where everything then starts to, you're able to regain your motion, and typically almost 100% will resolve without surgery, but it can take up to 2 years, and it can be a really frustrating process. It's different from rotator cuff pathology in that your rotator cuff is a muscle and a tendon, whereas this is an inflammation of the lining of the shoulder, but the two are directly adherent, so it can be a little bit confusing. And like I said earlier to one of the callers, most people are going to have some sort of tearing of their rotator cuff if you were to get an MRI, whether you have a problem with your rotator cuff or not, just from wear and tear. And so that can be a little confusing as well if you were to get an MRI in the setting of a frozen shoulder. The best way is to get the diagnosis by seeing a shoulder specialist or a sports medicine specialist who can differentiate by looking at your shoulder, by examining it, the difference between frozen shoulder versus an actual rotator cuff problem. Sometimes you can have both. And the treatment is to get rid of the inflammation and to really just keep stretching. And in most cases, it resolves without any surgery.
But it can take 2 years.
It can take a long time.
Yeah, you got to be patient. Yep. That's tough. Let's try to sneak in at least one more call. We have a couple of calls about meniscus tears in the knees. This is a common problem with runners and even people who aren't running. Viv in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Dr. Tanaka.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
So I injured my meniscus weightlifting a few months back, and I had an MRI and was told that there are two small tears on either side, the inside and the outside. I've read a lot and spoken to people who've had the meniscus surgery and kind of heard mixed reviews. I'm just wondering if you think surgery is the right option or if physical therapy is a better way to try to address it.
Thanks for the call. This is something that, you know, folks talk about all the time. You know, there's two camps, you know, I had the surgery and I feel better, or I feel worse, or I didn't have the surgery and I'm fine, I didn't need it. This is a controversial thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty tricky. And I think it's because the meniscus problem is not one entity. So a meniscus problem in somebody in their 20s who has an injury is a completely different problem than a meniscus problem in somebody who has arthritis, who's in their 70s. And like I said, you can have a meniscus tear, which is a wear and tear. And for that, you know, the surgery has, we've started moving away from that because we've started to see that the outcomes after meniscus surgery for a wear and tear, you know, what we call a clean out type surgery that we used to do fairly commonly on patients in their, you know, 60s, 50s and 60s, is not as effective as we thought. And the indications for that surgery are narrower. Now, in a young patient with a meniscus problem, because it's so important to preserve your joint and preserve the cushions and inside your joint, we generally lean towards that sooner, assuming that you have the right set of symptoms and history that indicate that.
Well, Miho Tanaka, it is always great to see you. Thank you so much. You are full of great ideas and great advice. We had great callers, so it's always good to have you here, and we look forward to the next time.
Thanks so much.
Dr. Miho Tanaka, she's a surgeon and an assistant professor of orthopedic surgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital, where she directs the Women's Sports Medicine Program. We've got a link to more information on our website, wipr.org/Midday. That'll do it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, it's our monthly Midday Movie Mayhem with movie mavens Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and the Washington Post film critic Anne Hornaday. We'll also hear from theater critic Jay Wynn Russick. She's going to review Noises Off at the Everyman Theater here in Baltimore. That's all coming up tomorrow at noon right here on Midday. Lunch today was provided by Dangerously Delicious Pies, and we are grateful to them. They have locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the square in Canton and at 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. Their menu includes a large variety of homemade sweet and savory pies and quiches. I'm Tom Hall. We appreciate your hanging out with us. We appreciate your emails and your tweets and your calls. We will see you tomorrow. Have a great day.